Hi, and welcome back to the Alternative Travelers Podcast. This episode is the first in our Alternative Destination series. Today's episode is all about Sarajevo. We'll talk about the culture, what the city's like, places to visit, and food to eat.
And interestingly, why the current pandemic has reminded us of a very significant part of Sarajevo's recent history, one that irrevocably shaped its future and legacy, just as this pandemic surely will for all of us. Stay tuned for more.
Welcome to the Alternative Travelers Podcast. I'm Sam.
And I'm Varen.
In each episode, we'll share stories, tips, and advice to help you live a life of unconventional travel.
For more, head to alternativetravelers.com. And now, let's get to the episode.
Hi, and welcome back to the Alternative Travelers Podcast. So this episode kicks off our kind of off-the-beaten-path alternative destinations series, where we talk about lesser-known places that we think you should consider for future travel. So in this episode, we're going to be talking about Sarajevo, which is the capital of Bosnia and Herzegovina. So, Varen, why don't you share with us how we ended up there?
So we ended up going to Sarajevo for about 2.5 months so that we could get the first draft of our book written.
Before that, we were traveling around Europe a bit faster than we normally do. We were house-sitting in Spain. We visited friends in France and Finland, but we weren't really in any place for super long. You know, it's not really that easy to get a big project like a book done when you're moving around. We had to leave the Schengen zone of Europe, which is like basically like Western Europe, what you think of as Western Europe minus a few countries. And Americans can only stay there for 90 days. So we had to leave. We were rounding out the end of our time. And we had been looking for houses, but we didn't really find one in an area that we could stay in. And we didn't find one that was long enough for what we wanted. So we decided to go to the Balkans and Sarajevo because it was affordable to rent a place there. So we stayed for, 2.5 months, and we finished the rough draft of our book. Well, actually, the rough draft and the edit basically finished it, right? More or less?
Yeah. We wrote most of the book there. Anything else that we did after was just finishing touches and getting it ready for release.
Yeah. So just to put that in context, we were in Sarajevo. We weren't in travel mode traveling around the country because as digital nomads, like in order to get a project like this done, it's not like we can just go back home and work. We need to like find a place to hunker down. So that was kind of what Sarajevo was. And being there for 2.5 months, we really got a good feel for the place. So we just wanted to, before we kind of like get into our experience there, we wanted to share a brief overview of Sarajevo and Bosnia now, and also like a little bit of history because it has a very complicated recent history that is just super important to be aware of. It's obviously way more complicated than we're going to talk about here. You could have like a whole podcast just talking about Sarajevo, but we just think it's super important to be aware of the context of the place, and also just because it's just not really talked about in your typical history lessons. I mean, like, what did you know about Sarajevo before we went there, Varen?
I just remember President Clinton in the 90s and some guy named Milosevic and Kosovo and then missiles being fired somewhere. So that was the closest I knew to any of the armed conflicts going on in the Balkans at that time.
Yeah, so you knew more than me. Well, obviously, because you're a bit older than me. But yeah, I just knew that, like, some nebulous bad thing happened in Sarajevo in the 90s. That's pretty much all I knew. And that idea kind of still persists to this day. I mean, when we were there, quite a number of people asked us if it was safe to be there. So that, which it totally is, by the way, but it just goes to show the international perception of Sarajevo and Bosnia still. So yeah, just think it's really important. So to give you like the quick fact sheet about Bosnia, population of the whole country is 3.3 million. So it's pretty small and pretty small in area. It's in the Balkans, so it's like surrounded by like Serbia, Croatia. It's across the Adriatic Sea from Italy, so to visualize in your mind where it is. Capital is Sarajevo, which is population of 275,000, so fairly small capital city. And to kind of put that in perspective, before the Bosnian War, which we'll like get into briefly, before that happened, the population of Sarajevo was 500,000. So that's like pretty crazy. Languages of Bosnia are Bosnian, Croatian, and Serbian. Which, what are the differences between those languages, Varen?
Not very much. People will debate otherwise who identify as Croats or Serbian or Bosniak, but essentially they're all the same languages with maybe some colloquial differences.
Yeah. Well, could you go over those three groups? Because I think that's really important for people to know.
Yeah. So you essentially have three major ethnic groups. And while people would argue ethnically they're all the same, they're all Slav, and they all come from the same Slavic stock of people who've populated this region for most of known history, they differ more in terms of their religious background. So, for example, Croats, who mostly populate Croatia and ended up forming that country, they represent a majority there, and they identify as Roman Catholic. Then you have the Serbs. And so that's what most of Serbia is. And Serbs identify mostly as Eastern Orthodox, which is a Christian religion, for those who don't know. And then there's the, what they call now themselves, the Bosniaks. And the Bosniaks identify as Muslim. And that is a very unique thing in most of Europe. There's very few cities that are predominantly Muslim. And I say city because Sarajevo is mostly Bosniak, and then I think most of the country is Bosniak. So in Bosnia and Herzegovina, most of the country identifies as Bosniak, but it's still very mixed in terms of these other groups of people.
Yeah, so yeah, Bosnia, that's super important to know, is that Bosnia is one of few countries that has a Muslim majority. So 52% of the country identifies as Muslim, which like in Europe, the only other countries that are also Muslim majority are Albania and Kosovo and Turkey. But like Turkey is like, do you consider that European? It kind of like straddles Europe and Asia. So yeah, it's very unique in that respect.
The major reason for that is because you have to go back a few hundred years back during the Ottoman Empire. And so the Ottoman Turks had control of that part of Europe for quite a while and naturally had a huge influence. They were very tolerant of other religions. Of course, it probably was more advantageous in terms of being a citizen in Sarajevo at the time in, you know, the 1700s, 1800s to be Muslim. I'm sure that would help you and be more favorable in lots of things. But in general, they were pretty tolerant and allowed, you know, differences in religion and other people to have whatever kind of traditions that they had. But it was definitely incentivized to become Muslim. So naturally, a lot of the population over the years converted to Islam. A lot of their culture, their habits, their food, their traditions are very much inspired by Islam. And you can see it in the homes, you can see it in the houses, you can see it in their history. It's not a clear line that delineates a lot of the traditions and customs. A lot of people across the different religious groups share a lot of these customs, and it's very common for intermarriage. It's very common for families, for example, to celebrate each other's holidays and such. So this really led to a very cosmopolitan city, a very international city.
Yeah, like Sarajevo was known historically as like the Jerusalem of Europe because of the historic religious tolerance that was there. And in the past, there was more, there wasn't such a... Yes, there was a Muslim majority during the Ottoman Empire, but it was less so than it is now because of the modern history when, which we'll get into, a lot of people who didn't identify as Bosniak or Muslim like left. So yeah, the Ottoman Empire was like overtook Bosnia for like literally 400 years. So obviously that had a huge influence, and you can really see it in the city itself. The old town of Sarajevo, which I literally cannot pronounce the name. You could, if you're interested, you could check out, I'll put it in the show notes, but I'm not even going to try, honestly. But the old town of Sarajevo, it has minarets, and I mean, there's minarets dotting the city, but it also like really reminded me of Istanbul in Turkey in so many ways.
So how exactly did it remind you of Istanbul?
Well, there's like, especially in one street, it super reminded me, this street that goes up the hill to this yellow fortress overlooking the city. And we went there for tea one day, and there's just, this street is just a cobblestone street going uphill, and you sit outside and have your little tea or coffee outside on these like wooden pallets, and there's little seat cushions to sit on. There's cats lounging around outside. And that really reminded me a lot of Istanbul, because it's like the same scenes, like people just drinking tea outside or coffee, cats everywhere. I mean, there's a whole documentary on cats in Istanbul. So it definitely reminded me of that. And just the tradition of, yeah, sitting around having tea and coffee outside and shooting the shit, basically, with whomever. Very chatty. And also just, like, the hubbub. Obviously, like, it's a much smaller city than Istanbul. Istanbul is, like, 14 million people or something like that. It's a bit overwhelming, to be honest. And Sarajevo, but it had the same bustle. Like, Sarajevo has the same bustle that I found in Istanbul. The same crazy drivers, to be honest. I mean, but a little more accessible because it is small, smaller, much smaller. So yeah, in that, in those ways, just like the small winding streets, the wooden old buildings, the mosques that are like have their courtyards. Yeah, all that kind of stuff really reminded me of Istanbul. But this old town that we're like talking about is very pretty small, and that's kind of like where everyone goes, and it's very busy. You can really see like there's like a literal like line where you have like the old town on the one side, and then the other side it like is, it transitions, it's not transitions even, it's very starkly, then from there is all the Austro-Hungarian buildings. And so the, yeah, after the Ottoman Empire, it was the Austro-Hungarian Empire for like 40 years. It's funny because we took a walking tour, and the tour guide was like, yeah, they built more buildings in the 40 years of the Austro-Hungarian Empire than in 400 years of the Ottoman Empire. So even though it was, the Austro-Hungarian Empire didn't have a very long time ruling over Bosnia, they certainly left their impression there in the architecture. And you can see that, which is cool. And lots of like historic old mansions in the hills. Because, like, I guess just to give some setting, like, what is the setting of the city, basically, Varen?
So, Sarajevo is kind of nestled in a valley, and on either side of you, you can see mountains. And then it kind of shoots down a little farther, and you can start to see, if you follow the electric tram main line that goes through the entire city, it starts to wind around. You get very much like a mountain weather, where it's going to be, it'll always drop quite a bit in temperature overnight. And then very often you can wake up to those big sheets of fog.
Or
smog.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're unfortunately rated some of the highest in all of Europe, I think, in terms of pollution. I think something per capita, they have pretty high pollution, unfortunately. This is not the only place where this happens, but when you tend to have a city in a valley, there's a way in which the smog kind of gets trapped there. And until another weather system moves in to push it out, it'll just kind of linger. And apparently can get really, really bad. We weren't there long enough to experience that, but I remember talking with some locals and they said, like, it can get so smoggy that you can't see the person next to you. So I'm glad I didn't catch that.
Yeah. It's actually funny that you're saying that, because it's really making me see all the parallels between Sarajevo and Salt Lake City, where we are now. Salt Lake City is also in a valley. They have really bad pollution problems, especially in the winter. They were also host for the Winter Olympic Games.
Yeah, yeah. So was Sarajevo. Sarajevo,
Salt Lake, places that we end up
mm-hmm.
off the beaten path, kind of. Yeah, unfortunately, the pollution is a real problem, and it's not just us that notices that. People have told us it gets way worse in the winter, and we left about mid-November, so we kind of missed that part, but we could still see it happening on some of the colder days. But it is really beautiful, like nestled in the valley. Bosnia, part of it is very mountainous, very green.
So you have this valley, and the city's right nestled in there, and you have one big main tram line. And then you also have a huge long boulevard that kind of cuts right through the middle of this, along the length of this valley.
I believe it's the only, yeah, it's the only tram line there. But I think it's interesting to note, kind of like setting the scene of what Sarajevo was and is today. But Sarajevo was the first city in Europe to have an electric tram network back in the 1880s, and only second in the world to have electric trams, second to San Francisco. So like, Sarajevo was a very cosmopolitan city. It's coming back to life now, but it's, I don't think that's the image that people have of it to this day. But I think it's important to understand that Sarajevo, yeah, it was a super sophisticated cosmopolitan city.
Or at least had the reputation.
Right, yeah. And then, so we're going back to our little history. We were at the Austro-Hungarian Empire, so a super important worldwide event happened in Sarajevo, which was the assassination of Franz Ferdinand, the Archduke of Austrian Archduke. So he was assassinated in Sarajevo, which it is kind of like what sparked World War One, or one of the things that sparked World War One. So. Yeah, you can still, there's still the bridge where he was, near where he was assassinated. There's a little car outside that's like, I'm not sure if it's probably not the same car, obviously, but like, one that looked like the one that he was riding in, because he was riding in a car. Then there's a little museum right in plaque right there, so you can like see where it all started. So yeah, so World War One broke out, so it was part of Yugoslavia from 1918 to 1992, which obviously that's a super long time. And yeah, so then what happened in 92, Varen?
Yugoslavia was beginning to kind of dissolve. There was people who were seceding, and so Croatia was able to successfully succeed for the most part. And there was a Serb nationalist group that did not want Bosnia to secede so successfully. Again, this stuff gets a bit more complex, a bit more complicated. We're just given enough of an overview to understand where the city was coming from and how this eventual conflict shaped the city and what we eventually experience. But this Serb nationalist group eventually decided that they wanted to keep Bosnia from seceding, and they decided to lay siege to the capital. So it's important to understand that this wasn't like a civil war, so to speak. And the series of events that led up to this they're a bit more nuanced, I guess you could say. It's not a clear cut, like how this all happened, but that's generally the idea, is a lot of this kind of ethnic religious tension being, you know, propped up by nationalist figures and wanting this kind of Serbian dominance to remain, because I believe the Serbians were mostly in control in the Yugoslavia Republic. So, that being said, eventually these groups that got armed decided to lay siege to Sarajevo. And the important thing to understand is that Sarajevo was very prosperous beforehand. They had the Winter Olympics not that long ago, I think in the 80s, in 84. And you know the history already. They're very cosmopolitan, very international, very much a melting pot in the Balkans. And they had a standard of living that was amongst the highest in Europe. So probably for a lot of Americans, you think of like Western Europe, and then the rest of Europe was like, oh, I don't know what that is. It's like, you know, these countryside areas in like Russia. Maybe that's what it's like. But they had a very high standard of living. So when they started hearing these, you know, inklings or these ideas or the possibility that there was an army marching towards Sarajevo, the idea that a war could happen there would be the equivalent of Americans being like, oh, there's someone marching in on New York City? No way. That's not going to happen. War that happens somewhere else, not here, not in such a prosperous place. What's interesting to us is kind of the parallels to what we're experiencing now with the pandemic and how it dramatically affected the way people's lives were going to be lived from that point on, and the new normals that it kind of created, because in a lot of ways, you couldn't go outside your home without the threat of death. Now, granted, going outside doesn't mean you're going to get, you know, a bomb dropped on you, but that was the case in Sarajevo. So there's a very similar fear of going outside, and just this, that can't happen here, that kind of blindsided everyone to foresee or even prepare in a lot of ways for what was going to come.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting and important to talk about right now, because these things seem like they happened so far away. I mean, like we said at the beginning, like, the only thing we ever knew about Sarajevo or Bosnia was, like, some armed conflict happened there, because it seems so remote, like, it could never happen where you are. But obviously no one ever thought a pandemic would happen. And it's important to remember that. And also, I think it makes me grateful that we're not having bombs dropped on us. You know, like, we're all being asked to stay inside in our cozy homes. I mean, for the most part, hopefully you have somewhere nice to be, and you have running water, and you have electricity, and you have all these things that were not the case in Sarajevo. I mean, could you imagine? Like, you couldn't go outside for fear of being killed by a random bomb or snipers. There's, like, the big boulevard that we're talking about, it's called Sniper Alley, because, like, if you went on there, you'd pretty much just be shot, and snipers were shooting at kids. Yeah, it was just insane. There's a lot of the time they didn't have running water, they didn't have electricity, massive food shortages. If you want to get a picture of what life was like during the siege, definitely recommend reading the book called Lugovina Street. It's a street in Sarajevo, and it is told from the perspective of an American journalist who was, like, there during the time, and she interviewed all these citizens living on that street, all from different backgrounds, and just talking about their experience and how they were, like, living in these, like, very nice mansions because they were well off, like, doctors, lawyers, again, very prosperous. And then this literal siege happens. So it wasn't even like, you know, I know everyone right now with the pandemic is getting impatient for things to be over. And it hasn't even been 2 months in the U.S., you know, and I mean, it was the longest siege of a capital city in modern warfare. And it was literally, like, over 3 years. So it was from April of 1992 to February of 1996. Like, can you imagine? Just putting that out there for, like, your daily dose of being grateful. And in no way, I don't want to minimize anyone suffering right now. Obviously, there are a lot of people suffering in very real ways, and unfortunately, it's really impacting disadvantaged communities. So, like, I just want to be very clear about that, but, like, I just think chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, I think that you probably have a pretty decent situation. I would just wager a guess, you know? So, anyway, it makes me grateful to think about that. Because sometimes things can feel really hard, for sure. And then if I'm like, okay, well, yes, I have these things. I have electricity, I have running water, I have food, I have the internet. I can go outside and walk around. I know that's not the case in some places still. They just opened up Spain. You can go out for an hour a day. Luckily, where we are, we can go out. So anyway, everyone's situation is different, but I think it's really important to talk about and think about right now.
Yeah, to get, like, a logistical understanding of what this was like, you had this army that surrounded a city, this city that didn't really have its own army. So it's important to understand that all the people they were targeting were civilians. These weren't even combatants. For the most part, they were sitting there hoping that the Americans were going to come and save them. And all the Americans did was maybe send some, like, old food. I think there was an interesting thing they mentioned in the book about rations from Vietnam.
Literally.
Yeah. They kept watching the news. Civilians would be hoping, we know this mostly from reading and research and going to museums and stuff, that they thought the Americans were kind of come in and save the day. So, like, imagine having that kind of hope for years, hoping that things would get better. And we mention all of this not just because it's history and because it's important, but also that this history is alive and present in your visit to Sarajevo, if you ever go there. There's no missing this, because on the side of our building is still bullet holes. I mean, Sarajevo is still very safe and very interesting place to visit, but there's like scars on the landscape, so to speak.
Yeah, literally, like, so there's these, what they call Sarajevo roses all around the city, and there are these pock marks in, like, the ground where, you know, a bomb had fallen and, like, a certain amount of people died. I think it was, like, 5 to 10 people had died in that blast. Like, you can literally stand there on the street and be like, holy shit, 20 people died here. These things are still there. They're not erased. And there's, like, I don't know exactly how many of these Sarajevo roses are everywhere. They've been kind of, like, painted and red and stuff like that. You just see them everywhere, walking around. Like Ryan said, the apartment building we stayed in had a giant, like, bullet hole in the side of it. So, like, the guy who we rented the apartment from was super nice. I also have to say, Bosnians are literally some of the nicest, most genuine people, most helpful people of any country we've been to, I think, personally. It was noticeable, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I also feel like we had a Bosnian or two tell us that maybe that's the case to foreigners. But I don't think they said that they're necessarily mean people. They just think that, you know, generally people, they're very welcoming to people in their city.
Yeah, like the hospitality is, and I think that is actually like one, a part of Islam, hospitality.
I mean, there's definitely, I mean, when we went and saw this really, really cool building from, I forget what time, like maybe the 1600s during the Ottoman Empire. It was called the Servo House. It was called like Servo's House. And that, by the way, that name is literally S-V-R-Z-O. And I think it's Servo's House. And, you know, you got to see like all the spaces they dedicated to entertaining guests and just how much such a priority in this very typically designed Muslim house, how they entertain guests and the importance of taking in guests and receiving guests and all the considerations that they make. It's really, 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 really fascinating. And yeah, you can see this home that's still intact from that time that kind of made its way through different merchant families and so forth. And then eventually was bought and became a museum. But it's just an intact, typical middle class merchant class house. But yeah, no, hospitality definitely plays a big part in their culture. And that's why you can still see everywhere people drinking what they'll call Bosnian coffee. And for a lot of people who, Bosnian coffee might appear to be just like Turkish coffee to a lot of people, which is like a coffee where you take the grounds and you boil it and it makes something very strong and you sip from like a tiny little cup. But, you know, it's just little things like this that still persist in the culture that constantly remind you of its history. And you see it throughout the present day Sarajevo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's just also so crazy to talk to people, like the guy that we rented our place from, like it was his family's apartment, his grandma's apartment, but him and his family like lived there, but they had to vacate it during the war because like, I think it was like, it wasn't safe and it didn't have electricity, like something like that. Cause it's like a very tall building. This was we stayed not in the old town. We stayed in like quote unquote new Sarajevo. So, yeah, and I mean, he was really young, like in his 20s, but he, you know, late 20s, I guess, he had lived through it. The walking tour guide, she was in her early 30s, she had lived through that, and she was like a kid during the siege, and she said how it was so great because she didn't have to go to school. But it's just like when you talk to people that are living there that like lived through it, it's like really crazy. And I know that like, I've read some stuff of just the collective, like, trauma of the society, like, I mean, like, going through that kind of thing. I mean, I think we're all seeing it now. I think all of our lives are going to be marked by this pandemic. Again, not saying it's the same as being bombed every day, but, like, there is some, you know, collective thing that's happening on right now, going on right now. We're all going through this uncomfortable experience, and is going to shape things in the future. So, yeah, just like the Sarajevo siege shaped that city, shaped the country. You can just see it everywhere. And the country still really hasn't recovered it's like getting there economically, but it's still, I mean, that's kind of like why we ended up there, because it was affordable for us as foreigners to pay for a place there. But like, we're coming in there with tremendous privilege to be able to do so, because Bosnians, their paycheck is extremely low. Like, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but I mean, they work really hard and earn barely nothing, and unemployment is ridiculously high.
You know, I mean, there's lots of signs of the high unemployment there, and you can see that. Sarajevo is a very interesting place. We definitely, now going through memory lane again, we think, oh, it'd be cool to visit there again. And it's just, the history and its recent history is inextricable from the experience there. I don't think you could really go visit the city unless you were right smack dab in the center and just went to the brightest, you know, happiest looking stuff, and then completely miss this whole history. So we feel like to go there to experience a place is to also experience its history.
Yeah.
And experience that through the people and talking with locals. And we very much had that experience. And this was something that we, you know, this history is something we amassed over time as we were there, because we were living there and we weren't trying to do sightseeing every day, you know?
So, yeah, so we've given kind of like our impressions, intermingled the history, but just to kind of give you a taste of what our experience was there, and then we'll kind of get more into like some things that you can check out to do if and when you go there. So why don't you lead us off with that, Farron?
So in general, the day-to-day life experience there was very similar to other European countries in the sense that you have a much more denser city core, and you pretty much have everything you need within a block, more or less. The big major differences, though, was compared to here to a city like Madrid, for example, is while you may find a grocery store or a little corner store on every block and a bar on every block, not every block has a sidewalk, especially the farther you get away from the downtown. So that was a very typical thing that we would experience trying to walk places and just being like, oh, this is not having a sidewalk, and then factor in the crazy drivers. So fortunately for us, we had a major conduit right next to us. So while this major conduit, this big main street slash, I guess it turns into a highway eventually, also has a tram line going along it, but also, as it parallels this river for the most part, has a huge long promenade that goes all the way to the downtown of the city and pretty far out to the outskirts of the city. So often we would just take the long way, which was much more peaceful and enjoyable, which was to go walk down to this promenade. So we'd either walk along that to get somewhere, or we would take one of the city bikes. And they had a city bike program called Next Bike. A lot of cities actually have this throughout, you know, sprinkled throughout Europe. We had experienced city bike in, okay, it was called Next Bike, and we also experienced it in Berlin, and it was incredibly cheap to take around, super affordable. I think it cost us the equivalent of like $2 or $3 a month to have like unlimited 30-minute rides or something like that. We weren't there with a car, so we got around by bikes to shoot to downtown within like 15 minutes max, or in the other direction if we wanted to check out some other things. And most of the stuff that we liked to go to walking wise was all within, you know, a 10-minute walk. So it was a very convenient place to live, but unfortunately it was really noisy right by this main street. So very often if we, you know, decided to leave the apartment outside of work, which is very often, you know, we would go for walks in the immediate neighborhood, and we'd go along the big river promenade, or promenade, I don't know how you say it. And yeah, that would be kind of like our day-to-day thing, because again, for those of you maybe who don't know, we work from home, our website supports us financially, so that's our job, that's what we do full-time. So we spent our days working on that, in this case specifically our book. And then, you know, would occasionally here and there go out and run errands, or maybe just go for a nice walk, go to the gym in the morning. That was our, you know, typical day.
Yeah, we actually like made some friends in the gym, so that was cool. And that's kind of like where we realized the quite high level of English that the younger generation has in Bosnia. Like, even just like literally everyone in the gym. I mean, we became, obviously people knew that we were like the foreigners there and people just speak to us in English, but like literally everyone we came across in the gym just had really great English, which was surprising. So yeah, so we got around all by biking, which was awesome. We actually like travel with bike helmets, which is not the most convenient, but I would not bike without a helmet. And yeah, it's super, you definitely don't need a car there for sure. Especially like if you're just visiting, not for as long as we did. Like we stayed, like Farron said, it was like a 15-minute bike ride out of the old town. I would imagine most people would be staying probably closer, as where like most of the hotels and stuff are, closer to the old town. But we were there for a long time, so we didn't need or want to be like in the heart of things. So yeah, I guess we can get into sharing some things, like things we visited, our experiences with that. What was your favorite thing that we did there, Farron?
My favorite thing that we did there? Ooh, that's hard to say. Definitely not any of the tourist attractions. I was not a fan of that.
Farron hates tourist attractions, though. He's, like, adamantly against that. And also, like, we already said we were working on a book, so we weren't in tourism mode. But even in general...
I guess it's something we can go more into in a slow travel episode, but I just don't see... I don't see the point in going to tourist attractions just because that's something someone suggests I should do. There's that aspect, but then also if I know it's going to be really crowded, it really hampers my enjoyment of an experience. If I have to be like in long lines around obnoxious people with their loud, obnoxious children, I don't want to do it. And I just, why do I want to just be in crowds all day of obnoxious tourists? Well, let's just face it, most tourists, especially when they congregate, tend to be just some of the most unfun people to be around.
So Farron and I kind of disagree on this aspect. I'm always dragging Farron to tourist attractions. A lot of times I've been branching out and doing things on my own now. So I definitely did a lot more on my own in Sarajevo. Because I think there is value in going to some tourist attractions.
Yeah, sometimes. Very few. But I guess now I remember one of my favorite experiences, which was, it's a very sad, somber piece to see, was when we went to the museum about Srebrenica. Mm. And that was where, unfortunately, a ethnic cleansing occurred and probably wasn't the only place where it happened. These Serb nationalists basically separated all the Muslim men from the women and children and executed them. Yeah. And had like mass graves and burials and everything. And so this museum documents all of these kind of things that happened with photographs, with videos, with audio pieces narrating things. And it was, you know, it's definitely a very sad experience to do, but I think it's important to know and understand, you know, recent history to really kind of feel like you can, I feel like it's a way to really properly experience another culture. You got to learn the bad with the good, you know? And when you just show up to a place and go, I'm going to see the Eiffel Tower, and then I'm going to have a coffee on the street in Paris, just like the movies, I don't really think you're experiencing that country.
So maybe I'm just thinking right now, maybe refine your distaste to landmark attractions. Like something that's just quote-unquote insta-worthy, but you don't know any history behind it. I think it's very easy. You use Paris as an example, and I think it's a, like... Everyone is like, Paris is so dreamy, like, blah, blah, blah. But I think it can be also very easy to go there and not know anything about the place.
Yeah, I think that. But I also think it's dreamy because people think they're living a movie. And most of these places, like, why the hell do you care about going to Paris and going to the Eiffel Tower? I'll put it this way. I don't have any friend that lives in New York, native New Yorker or not, who would say, oh, yeah, to experience New York, you have to see the Statue of Liberty. Most of them have never gone to see the Statue of Liberty. So why do you have to experience the Eiffel Tower to experience Paris? So that to me is just called tourism industry marketing bullshit.
But there is value in some places, such as the museum.
I'm not denying that, but I rather come across them more serendipitously or through a friend or a local who lives there and is experiencing there, not just because movies and a travel brochure insist, in order to experience this place, I need to go to this landmark.
Oh, through your girlfriend's research of the best places that I think you'd enjoy.
That's, you know, that helps. That might make me a bit more open to trying and experiencing things, but so far my attitude has not really been changed, because when I go to see really popular stuff, I don't have a good time. And when I go to see less popular stuff that has way less people around and way less obnoxious children, it's just more fun. I just enjoy myself. There was no obnoxious children in this museum.
I think you should add us a caveat, though you actually love children and you are really good with them.
There's people who don't like obnoxious people. Doesn't mean I don't like people.
It's very true. Which, I think to your point about enjoying places that are less crowded and less... I mean, that is kind of like one of the reasons to get more off the beaten path, you know? And like the Servo's house, that was really amazing. We were like some of the only people in there on a Saturday.
Yeah, because you had to walk up a hill to get there.
Very true. But it was really awesome. That was definitely one of my favorite experiences there. And yeah, it really reminded me of like some, like a very, 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 very smaller version of like the Alhambra in Granada. I mean, it has the same Islamic architecture and stuff like that. And it looks out on the mountains and this or that. But it was really cool that it was a very well-done museum, so if you go, definitely recommend, if you go to Sarajevo, definitely recommend that one. And, yeah, I'll link to all these places in the show notes, so you can come back to it. And, yeah, definitely recommend doing a walking tour. There's, like, a few companies that do walking tours. It was super, like I said earlier, I took a walking tour with someone who was, she was in her like 30s and she had lived through the siege, and it was really interesting to hear her and her perspective on it. So I personally really love walking tours. I think I like doing it like one of the first days we get to a place, because I think it kind of gives you a good overview and then you can ask questions and you can see what else you want to do when you're there. So, another thing that I did that Varen did not partake in, but, yeah, I went up to this place called the Yellow Fortress, and it's, yeah, like, these ramparts that, again, you have to go up a massive hill, because it's in a valley, you have to go up this massive hill, and it overlooks the whole valley, and it was super beautiful. There's, like, a little cafe there. I met a kitten, so obviously that was great. And it is very somber, though, like, because you can see the graveyards from, as you're walking up this hill, you can see these massive graveyards from everyone who died during the siege. So, like, 11,000 people died during this siege. And it's just so chilling to walk by these graveyards and see the dates on the graves are, like, all from the same year. Like, it's just so crazy. Very sobering. But again, I think it's very important to recognize. So that's another cool thing to do, the Yellow Fortress. Definitely recommend that one. It's very popular for like sunsets and stuff. I didn't go for the sunset. I went a little earlier. It was still great. The most popular, I think one of the most popular things to do in Sarajevo is to go up the mountain. So there's like this, a cable car that you could take up there. And they're up to the mountain where a lot of the Winter Olympic like events took place. And so there's the bobsled track from the bobsled event. And it's like, kind of overgrown now, and you can like walk around it and all that. And I'm gonna straight up be honest, we were like a tad disappointed. For me, I was like, I love street art and looking for it. And everyone's like, oh my God, the bobsled track, street art. And like, I'm sorry, but some street artists like really need to get up there and paint some nice murals, because it was all just like tags and like scribbles and really nothing too remarkable whatsoever. I think that's potentially a missed opportunity to like make some murals about like the history of the city and stuff, because in the city there was some murals about like the Srebrenica massacre that Varen mentioned or other things, but apparently they haven't gotten up to the bobsled track. Also, we went on a Saturday, so it was very crowded.
Yeah, I think it's also a difference between street art and graffiti. One's not necessarily better than the other, but if you set up some, if you say, hey, there's going to be lots of street art, people expect murals. If you say there's going to be lots of graffiti, people are going to expect to see tags and, like, you know, different stylized written letters and stuff and words. Yeah, the views were really pretty. The cable car was the best part of it. Everything getting up to the cable car and leaving the cable car was the not the best part of it.
Varen was in such a bad mood. It was a really beautiful day and it was crowded. So, like, that's our bad. Like, but
it just was like a Bosnian version of so many parks, like state or national parks or city parks that I experience in the U.S., where it's just overrun, places selling food that is just not interesting to eat at all, and just like too many people everywhere. And then now on top of it, the whole Instagram phenomenon. So just everyone's always posing for like Instagram photos all the time. It's just such a weird energy to be around.
Yeah, but the views were very beautiful.
So. Yeah, it was pretty.
Yeah. Yeah. And the cable car was super fun. But now that I'm thinking about it, one of my favorite days was when we went on like a ridiculously long bike ride to this kind of like little suburby town called Ilija. So, and there's like this nature park there that we kind of walked around, but it was just fun to bike out there and interesting.
Yeah, I just remembered my favorite thing about Sarajevo, and that was going to Zdravo.
Yeah. So what's that?
Zdravo is how you say hello in Bosnian, and it's also the name of the 100% vegan place in Sarajevo, which is far outside the center. So you already weed out 90% of people, because it takes, I don't know, it's just not outside their hotel, so they don't want to go. But it has incredible food. Everything's homemade. Apparently, I never saw a man in the whole staff is women. I never saw a man serving or doing anything.
Yes, of course you loved that.
Yeah, yeah. There are all these really cute girls in overalls and like red bandanas, and just so sweet and friendly. And they were, yeah, everything was homemade there. Food was incredible. Food was so good. And they were very into a lot of raw food, everything was gluten-free. They had this incredible bread that I took me so long to figure out what they were using it to make it. And it was this fresh bread they used there for everything that is, it was oat and buckwheat. And so that's how it was gluten-free. And people could take a thing or two from them, because most of the time you have gluten-free bread, it's terrible. But this stuff was so soft and flavorful, it was delicious. And I went there and had cappuccinos. They had their own milk that they made there. We talk more about it in a vegan guide we wrote to Sarajevo, but I really, 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 really enjoyed my time there. And once we found the place, I probably went there once or twice a week.
I'm sure we're going to have to do an episode eventually about our traveling together as a couple. But the dynamic is, I have a list of all these places that I want to go, and I want to go, and Varen's reluctant. Finally, we make it to somewhere, like Zdravo. About a month into when we were there, Varen loves it, and then that's the only place he ever wants to go ever again.
I mean, they made their own hazelnut milk for their coffees, and if you wanted to get like an espresso drink, espresso is pretty terrible in Sarajevo. It just tastes like you're drinking burnt liquid. But there, they knew how to make a really, really good espresso, and or just any kind of espresso drink. And on top of that, they had homemade nut melts that they made themselves and also knew how to steam those. So I love a good cappuccino, and they provided a good cappuccino. And on top of that, they had great food, too.
It was wonderful.
It was super cozy vibes. We made friends there.
Yeah, we met a fellow house sitter there, which is really awesome.
Yeah, it was such a cool spot. But if I had to say something closer to town that I actually really enjoyed was that little, when we went in between meal times so that it was pretty much just us, when we went to that little nettle place in near the downtown.
Yeah, so the singing nettle, that was awesome. It was like a traditional Bosnian tavern, super cute, run by like this couple who we pantomimed things, but they had a bunch of, so their whole menu is everything has nettle in it. And so it's like traditional Bosnian food, with like, but with that kind of twist or element. And they had a lot of vegan stuff. Like, I don't even think it was definitely a conscious thing to have these vegan stuff, but it was also traditional food. So like they had these savory nettle donuts that just like happened to be vegan, or they had like different, like in traditional Bosnian food, like stews are a big thing, and you can get like veggie stews. I mean, a lot of times they do put meat in it, but there's also ones that don't have meat in it. So yeah, we got some of those kind of things there. Very delicious, ridiculously affordable for what we're used to, and really good food. So I recommend that, the singing nettle. But yeah, we'll leave a link to our guide, vegan guide to Sarajevo, in the show notes. But like, what are some traditional dishes or things that are vegan naturally, Varen?
Well, because of the Middle Eastern influence, they have a lot of falafel around there. They have a lot of breads, a lot of big doughy white breads,
which Varen called pillow bread.
You called it pillow
Did
bread.
I? Yeah. It like feels like a pillow.
It was like a big, they called it pita, but it wasn't like the flat bread pita that we think of. It was like this really fluffy bread that you cut, you know, a pocket into so you could stuff it with things, but it was fluffy and very airy.
Well, I think there's another word that's like samoon or something.
Yeah, yeah. It looked like samoon or something like that. They also, anything with red peppers, they love like sweet red peppers. They have just a huge bounty of sweet red peppers towards the end of the summer, which we got to experience, along with tomatoes, some incredible tomatoes there that you just pick up at the regular supermarket. And
what's the star, the red pepper?
There's this spread that everyone loves to put on everything that's called Ivar, and it's made of roasted red pepper and eggplant and garlic and some oil, and it's blended pretty smooth. It still has a texture, but you spread it on everything. I loved eating it. I grew up eating this a bit once we lived in New York, and we would go visit my aunt and uncle. And my uncle by marriage is Serbian. At the time, he would identify himself as Yugoslav, so I got to experience a lot of the foods he liked to eat. And one of my most memorable things from that experience was having Ivar, and I loved Ivar. So we always had a jar or two of Ivar in the apartment to just put on things, put on bread, put on whatever. It's just delicious. You want it on everything.
Mm-hmm. And it's traditionally vegan. Yay.
Yes.
Yeah. And then I've had it before, and you've had this before too, but we didn't really have any there. Rakia. So what is that?
It's a grape liquor. And a lot of people like making it. A lot of people, again, I had experienced rakia when I used to work for a Croatian restaurant in Astoria, Queens, in New York City. And yeah, everyone loves to make it. And this, it was, you know, the Croatians loved having rakia and saying, oh my God, we got this one made, homemade, and all that kind of stuff. Basically, my point is you'll see a lot of similar foods throughout these groups. Different groups of people, whether it's Croatia, Bosnia, or Serbia. But yeah, rakia is a very strong, very potent grape liquor. They even had a few varieties at the Etsravo, my favorite restaurant to go to in Sarajevo.
Is it your favorite restaurant, Varen? I didn't know.
In Sarajevo? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I had had rakia when I was in Serbia on another trip, so I was like, that's fine. I don't really need to try that again. I'm not a big liquor person, so but that's another thing that's big there. Yeah, the bread everywhere. There's just bakeries everywhere called the word is like pakara. They're everywhere, and there are some baked. There's like a potato baked good that's vegan. Anyway, we'll link it that guide in the show notes. But yeah, that's kind of like briefly about food, just to give you an idea. Yeah, and so like these days, like we mentioned, like Sarajevo is kind of like, even though that the siege and the war happened, like it ended 95, so how many years ago was that? 25 years. They're still slowly coming out of it, but they still have a very strong priority and emphasis on the arts and culture and stuff like that. So the Sarajevo Film Festival is probably like one of the biggest, if not the biggest, events there. It had just ended like right before we arrived, and it is huge. People come from all the around the world so to go to that. I learned actually that Sarajevo is one of UNESCO's like 18 world cities of film or something like that. So that's cool. And tourism's definitely growing there. It's one of the places where you could, as a tourist, your dollar is going to go a lot further, and it would be helpful and good for them to have like more tourism to help support their economy. Whereas like I think that's one of the reasons why I'm so adamant about advocating for lesser known destinations. Not just because that's what we prefer to do, and we know, yeah, so we know you guys are interested in alternative destinations too. And we're also really passionate about talking, kind of propping them up, because these are places where tourism definitely has a lot of room to grow. There's so many places in the world that like could very much do with way less tourism. We're seeing it now with the pandemic, like places, the locals actually now have the ability to enjoy their own cities, whereas in the past, tourists, the massive hordes just completely took it over and left things unaffordable, left negative environmental impacts, like all this kind of stuff. Like there, you can travel, like to me, sustainable and responsible tourism is going to these lesser known places that could use your, tourism dollars as opposed to being, another contributing to over tourism somewhere else. So yeah, that's what kind of we hope to do with this series covering more alternative destinations.
Yeah, I think it's important to think about why you travel, where you go to travel, why do you feel the need to go to a certain place? Is it because you saw it in a movie and it seems like the thing to do? I mean, it doesn't get more unoriginal than going to Paris for your vacation, or Valentine's Day or whatever, So try to be a bit more open with your concept of travel. And if you're really interested in stuff that's off the beaten path, just try to be open about where you're traveling and think about why do you need to travel. If you want to learn about another culture, are you going to really be able to learn about another culture when it's overwhelmed with tourism? You're just going to be experiencing tourists in place, and you might as well go to Disneyland at that point. So, with a section that's just called modeled after a particular city. So I hope we're encouraging you to be a bit more open about why you travel and where you're going to travel. And if you just want to experience something else, there's no need to go to the top tourist destinations. And if you just want a break or a vacation, think about where you're going, if that place is really going to provide that for you.
Yeah. So to wrap things up, what are your overall thoughts and feelings about Sarajevo? Would you go back? in what capacity, recommendations for someone going, like, who do you think would really enjoy going to Sarajevo?
I think it depends on the length of your stay. I think people who tend to do more of the city hopping kind of style of travel, which we're not big fans of, I think a few days in Sarajevo would be enough for them to keep them interested. But if you're someone who wants to experience what it's like to live somewhere else, you need at least a week or two there. Just hang out for a bit, slow things down, maybe go at a pace of one thing a day if you want to see what it's like there, to kind of get into the rhythm of the place. But it also, if you were taking buses around the country, wouldn't hurt to, you know, pop into some places for a day or two. I know there was another city far out, not too far out, that you could go and spend like an afternoon at. So, with an
Mostar,
M. Mostar or something like that. So, yeah. I mean, it depends on what you want. If you want something, you know, off the beaten path, I would, you know, say more accurately, a road less traveled, still traveled by a lot of people. You can definitely check out Sarajevo and have that kind of experience, where at least maybe you don't come in with a preconception or something that's been popularized in media. And that way you can be pleasantly surprised. You know, there's a lot of little interesting things to experience there for sure.
Yeah, I think what you brought up about visiting for a few days reminded me that I had talked to a number of people who had been there and were like, oh my gosh, I love Sarajevo. It's so great. And they had visited for a few days. So I think that, and us and another person we had talked to that were there for longer, then you kind of get to see the place and experience it. And then, like any place, really, so we're not saying it as a specific mark against Sarajevo, but once you're in any place for longer, you start to see the things that maybe you don't like as much. So I know towards the, we were definitely ready to leave behind the indoor smoking when we were leaving. So you can, like, it's just such a foreign thing, I think, to most people from, like, quote-unquote, like, Western world. Smoking indoors, like, what? That still happens in places. And, yeah, you can still smoke inside in Sarajevo, including in bars and restaurants. So that was another reason why we liked Zdravo so much, because there was no smoking inside. And I think it was, like, the only place we came across where that was the case. And it might seem like, in the abstract, it might seem like kind of like a quaint thing, like, but when that's the case literally everywhere, and like, if you're sensitive to smells, I know I get a headache if I'm around someone that's smoking heavily and all the time, and I think you do too, probably, Varen, then it just gets to be really kind of annoying, to be honest. So it's those kind of things that, like, you know, wear on you after you're in a place for a long time. Yeah, definitely, now that we've been reminiscing about Sarajevo, I would be interested to go back. There's so many museums and things there. We just, even though we were there for 2.5 months, we didn't even get to them all. And like I said, obviously you could get to them all in 2.5 months for sure. But like I said, that wasn't, our speed when we were there. I would go back to Sarajevo for, like, maybe a week, but I would also love to travel around the country more and be more in that, like, maybe adventure mode, because there are a lot of beautiful mountains there and other places that I'd love to see and explore in a different travel style and capacity and stuff. And like I said, I really liked Bosnians. They were... So, yeah, I would enjoy doing that. So, yeah, sound like that wraps it about up. So hope given you a good place to consider for some future travel. We will link to everything that we mentioned in the show notes. And as always, if you have any questions, feel free to get in touch. Again, everything we talked about is... The history and everything is just so complicated. It's like I'm thinking already, like, of more things that we could have said or gone into or whatever, but, like, I just felt like it was important to give in the context and all that, so you can certainly dig deeper into this. But hopefully that gives you kind of an overview and where to start and all that good stuff.
I think that about wraps it up. Hope you're enjoying the first installment in our Off the Beaten Path / Road Less Traveled Destinations. Let us know what you like, what you didn't like, what you want to hear more of, so we can incorporate that into the next episode. It's definitely, it's our first, but it's not our last. We have some more coming along the way.
Thank you for listening to the Alternative Travelers podcast. For more episodes and show notes, go to alternativetravelers.com/podcast.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider leaving a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. This helps more people find the podcast and is greatly appreciated.